It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you this morning?
Morena, Rachel, I'm doing very well, thank you. It's, the weather hasn't yet got frozen, but I think it's going to get worse. I can still crawl out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning without, feeling I'm going to die, get frostbite or something.
Yes,
but,
yeah.
It's all downhill from
definitely
here, though.
Definitely, we can feel the change. Feel the change coming. Well, we've got some big ones to talk about today. We're going to talk a little bit about Eden Park and how the sort of way that the new events has been rolling out there. Also, a wee bit about our vaccine centres here in Tāmaki. But let's start with some national news because it does affect, it affects a lot of people here. This is the government's announcement that they're going to restrict wage increases for public service workers. And that's for people who earn $60,000 a year or more. Now, this is going to affect a lot of people, and it has been widely criticised, particularly by people who are saying it just came out of the blue, really, and it's going to affect all sorts of services. Like, we're seeing teachers being very concerned about this, people working in healthcare being very concerned about this. And I wanted to know, what are your thoughts around this this announcement? Is it something that you're surprised by? Do you think this is going to be a problem for those sectors?
I was surprised by it. It's their call and they are the best people to explain why they made that decision. I suspect they were looking at, the growing debt levels caused by, the need to have the wage, the $14 billion worth of wage subsidies under COVID-19. So it's not exactly clear how it's going to operate. There seemed to be some qualification of it yesterday when Grant Robertson said that the pay for public servants such as teachers, nurses and police are still subject to collective bargaining and won't be constrained by the pay freeze. You can only take those words at their face value. I think there needs to be restraint in wages, given the circumstances we're facing. Putting a freeze on, however, and probably without any warning at all to people, maybe a step beyond which they should not have gone. I think there'll be discussions entered into now. The trade unions will be, very grateful for things like the big changes in pay equity, which will be quite expensive. And they will also acknowledge that the people at the lowest end, the 25% of lowest paid public servants, won't be subject to any freeze at all. But it's still a big call to say that there would be no overall wage rises for 3 years, although you can still move up your pay bands. I suppose the next question is, would this apply to local government?
Yes.
And the answer is no. We are not intending to put in place a pay freeze. What we did ask for last year and got cooperation over was restraint, so that council staff earning over $100,000 last year didn't get any increases, and over half of them took a six-month reduction of between 5 and 10%, which was a voluntary reduction. As was the case with elected members, we took a 10 to 20% reduction. And, what we're trying to do in council is we've obviously moved and instituted the living wage, and we're extending that to contracted workers like cleaners at the moment. We're also trying to just keep the salaries at the top level down. So the new chief executives of the council-controlled organisations and council itself are all being paid significantly less than their predecessors. We've just appointed a new Watercare chief executive, very able guy, very well qualified, but he's getting more than $200,000 less than his predecessor. So we're trying to help the people at the bottom, put a little bit of a curb on the salaries at the top, but if we were to freeze our salaries across the board, we would just find that our staff already being poached by central government and by the private sector, we simply wouldn't be able to retain the most able and capable people.
This seems to be a concern, moving back to this, the more sort of central government issue here, this seems to be a concern that people in the public sector are voicing loudly about this government sort of pay freeze. I know that that's not the language that the government's using, but for all purposes, it's seeming to look like that. And we're seeing a lot of concern about, particularly people who've been working in the health sector and teachers have been quite vocal around this, because we've heard a lot in the last few years about how those industries are already under a lot of strain. We don't have enough. They're not being paid enough. These seem to be the, you know, repeated refrains here. People are worried that we're going to get these wonderful teachers that we've got here, wonderful healthcare workers, poached overseas where they can get a bit more money, or poached into private industries where they can get a bit more money. Do you think this is a valid concern for what the government has just announced?
Yeah, I think the government does need to take heed of that. And they would say, I think, in their defence, that the salary rises that they gave to nurses and medical staff and teachers last year was more than they would have got in the five preceding years put together. So there was a big catch-up last year that the government came to the party for, and maybe that's partly what's causing it to respond in this way, that they don't want the costs to so blow out that they're not able to implement some of the major changes that they're trying to implement within the resources that are available in a post-COVID era. Mm. So I think there's a need to balance all of those factors. Personally, I probably wouldn't have gone down the path that the government has. I would have tried to negotiate something that about restraint.
Do you think it's a political misstep? Because, you know, this is the main voter base for the Labor Party is this kind of public sector. Do you think this is a political misstep by the government?
I think there are political risks in it for government. Because 3 years, if there's no movement in your pay for 3 years, but the costs of things like housing and rent still goes up, people are going to feel aggrieved by that. So I think that maybe the government will take pause and just reflect on some factors, and I can't speak for them. I don't know what's in their mind on this issue, but maybe there's a room for some greater compromise that combines the need for restraint with the need also just to have some compensatory increases to cater for increasing costs.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Eden Park. We've seen some pretty massive events there already, the 50,000 person strong 660 gig just a few weekends ago. Now, this has been a long time in the making, getting events held in this space, and it's been quite contentious for the local community. But how has the response been to these first few things that we've seen happening there?
Well, I think what the 660 concert, which was a great act, and also the people that performed before 660, Dave Dobbin and Drax Project and the others, it showed that this is a venue that can hold over 50,000 people. It was set out actually under the Auckland Unitary Plan way back in 2016 that Eden Park was able to have up to 6 concerts a year. But the way in which it was set out is that they had to get a consent each time they did that, and with some opposition, that made it a long and expensive process, which meant that effectively there couldn't be concerts there. I think the public mood has changed somewhat. If you look at when the matter went to independent hearing commissioners for a consent, there were nearly 3,000 submissions in support and only 180 against. And I think that Eden Park has been quite astute in the way that it has tried to draw in the local community and win its support. And, 3 or 4 years ago, you would have said, overwhelmingly the local neighbourhood was against it. I don't think you can say that now. Mm. And they did have some sound barriers up, and they did finish by 10:30 at night, and there were other restraints on it. But from my point of view, we should having the widest possible choice of venues for concerts is good, and something that attracts a concert that large, then Eden Park is the right size for a concert of that nature. What we need to be sure of, because it's in part a zero-sum game, not entirely, but in part, a concert that's held at Eden Park is therefore a concert not held at Western Springs or not held at Mount Smart. Now, we don't own Eden Park. though we've got, you know, a $45 million investment in it, in the loan that we've given to or taken over for Eden Park, which it wasn't able to get renewed from the ASB. So I think what I'd expect to see is a close working together of the Eden Park Trust Board and Auckland Council, so that we can work together to increase the size of the cake rather than squabble over a diminishing cake.
Yes,
so we need a single management approach, I think, for both sporting events and concerts. And I would expect that, you know, the money that that Eden Park can get from concerts would come off the expectation of the subsidy that they are asking each year for from the council.
Well,
so in that sense, I mean, we need to work those things through, and we are working more closely with the Eden Park Trust Board now and hope to reach agreement on some of those things.
Well, just very briefly before we let you go, I did just want to just mention that we're seeing some new vaccination clinics opening up ahead of the major rollout of the COVID vaccine here in Auckland. There's particularly a large one opened on the North Shore, which is looking like good news. How are our sort of like DHBs and our health care providers set up for the larger rollout of the vaccine here in Tāmaki Makaurau?
Well, I think it's going steadily. It would go much faster if we had community transmission and people were dying and our health system was overwhelmed. So at this point, we can probably afford to do it carefully and consistently. And when we've rolled out, I think we've got 8 centres now. We started at Highbrook Drive in East Tāmaki. We opened in April another one in Mount Wellington. There's one opened at the beginning of this month at the former Noel Leeming warehouse in Henderson. We're the one that you mentioned that's opening in Highbury. Another one's going to open in Westgate. Then we've got the Manurewa Vaccination Centre in Clendon Park, the Otara one in the old MIT building, which I've visited, and the Auckland CBD Vaccination Centre at Elliott Street. And Ashley Broomfield's now also talking about super clinics, which can do, mm-hmm. you know, tens of thousands of people in a single day. And we need to build up to that. We've administered probably, this is last week's figures, but it was over 300,000. But then, you know, if you take the New Zealanders over the age of 16, you're talking... Not exactly sure of the figures, but you're talking probably close to 4 million. So we've still got a long way to go,
yeah.
And I think we all expect to see that program ramp up. I think it's in July. It's open for everybody, and I think they've worked through quite sensibly what the priority groups are. So if you're on the border, you've been vaccinated. If you're a frontline health worker, you've been vaccinated. If you're at risk of getting really sick from COVID-19, you're eligible for that now. And then from July,
everybody
over 16 can get the jab.
Well, that is all we've got time for this morning. But thank you very much for speaking to us, Mayor Phil Goff. It's always great to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Look forward to it, Rachel.
Cool, kakite. Thank you.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Thank you.